Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
All right, a little different from our Fab Four opening, but George, we are starting Real Recovery.
We are.
Without the Beatles.
Gosh, you know, I was sitting here just relaxing and we're on. This is on. I'm used to hearing Help.
Yeah, I am too.
And that's such a great song. Help, I need somebody.
It's the best. You know I need someone, not just anybody.
Not just anybody. And
you know I need someone. Help.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
That's step one.
That is step one.
And Real Recovery is a show about, you know, you'd think in 11 years I could learn to talk. Maybe it's an age deal or too many parties when I was younger.
It's one of the two.
But what we talk about on this show is we have the real connection to God through Jesus. And if you're a Christian, you're in recovery because your life should be different than it was before. And if you're in recovery from a chemical issue, Bill, eating, shopping, gambling, drinking, whatever, Jesus is the way to not only help you stop, but have the life that he created you to have. If you're in recovery, you have a purpose. And when I'm working with guys, I tell them, hey, the great thing here, and most guys that are older than 25 don't have a lot of male friends. And the reason is they get out of college or high school, they start working, they get married, they have kids, and so they're working, they're with their family. They're lonely guys outside of their family, and of course that is primary, and that's great. But you get into recovery, not only do you have a purpose, you've got more friends than you could have dreamed of. Mm-hmm. And you have real important relationships. I know my horizontal relationships are good when my vertical relationship is good, and that's where it starts.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this, George, but I had...
I got a good shot. Can we try that?
Yeah, I like that. This week on my afternoon show, I had J. Warner Wallace on. And
is he a cop?
Yeah, well, he's a former retired Los Angeles homicide detective.
That's not how I know him.
He worked on cold cases, yeah. So anyway, he said, and it stuck in my brain all week, the gospel fixes all of your stupid.
Well, some of us are a work in progress.
Yeah.
I think it does, obviously, because what it does is focus on him instead of you.
Right.
I think a lot of the problems I get into, is I'm going to fix myself. I know what I need. I know what I need to do. The fact that I'm in recovery is evidence of the fact I don't know what I need. He does. And when I go to him and pray about things, he'll bring people into my life that help me. I was working with a guy a couple months ago who is in, just got out of a rehab center. I've known this guy for a while. He went back, and this guy was telling me that one of the changes he made is he started getting up earlier in the morning to do his quiet time. Well, I had cancer about 6 years ago, and I used to be a 4:30 in the morning guy. Like, I know you're early riser.
Getting up or going to bed?
Getting up.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had to clarify. It's the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I found that when I get up and do that, we're in charge of doing what I think I should do. I go to God first. And it convicted me. Here I am trying to help him. And so I started getting up a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It's made a huge difference. And those little things, here I am trying to help him, and God spoke to me through this guy. And, you know, you've been a guy that's happened with. You gave me those tapes by Tim Keller when you were a volunteer at the treatment center I was the director at. And you go, why don't you ever talk about holiness? And I said, I probably said this twice in my life, I don't know. And he said, would you be willing to listen to this? Well, what do I have, 200 of those things?
Yeah.
And it really changed my life.
Mm, good.
And
the
so,
gospel does.
Well, yeah, and you're always talking about godly appointments, that if God is sovereign, everybody you meet, there's a reason. Mm-hmm. And you got me looking at that.
Cool.
But where I'm going with this, if we look at step 12, Bill, where we've had the spiritual awakening as the result the result of these steps. We carry the message to others, and we practice these principles in all our affairs. Where I see most guys mess up, Bill, after they get sober, is they go into what they call a maintenance mode. There is no such thing. You're either going forward or you're going backwards. And you got to work at this. I heard Dr. David Jeremiah on this station talking about, he talks to his body, and I thought, wow, I got somebody else that's a little off on the station besides me. But what he said is, body, we're getting up. I know you don't want to, but we're getting up, and we're going to do our quiet time, and we're going to work out, and then we're going to work. And that really helps me. All these affairs, Bill, you take it into work, you take it to your family, you take it to the golf course, be a witness, because you never know who's watching you and what they see.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you used to go sit in a coffee shop reading your Bible, and people would come up to you and talk about God and your problems. You know, you're always thinking about ways to carry that. And you do that better than anybody met. And I know this is wrecking the program for you because we're actually being nice to each other. But
it's throwing things off a little.
There is an amount of effort in this. You don't have it. You haven't arrived. And so today, if you're listening and maybe you're getting, you're plateauing in your walk with the Lord and your recovery, maybe you need to add something to us and to it. And what I always look at is, where could I be of service? It's not the thing I want to do, but it's one of those that even though the effort is something I don't want to do, the outcome more than makes up for the effort.
Mm-hmm. George, we have about 3 minutes left. I'd love for you to talk.
3 minutes to kill?
No. 3 minutes of solid content.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Talk about this idea of hitting bottom and how people can clearly hit bottom, but they don't count it as bottom and they continue to move on from there. How do we get an addict's attention?
Well, I think there's kind of an all or nothing mentality with us that things have to get really bad before I'm going to change. And if you step back from that and go, okay, things are bad right now, or you wouldn't be thinking about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the only way you change is if the Holy Spirit convicts you, even if you don't believe in God. I don't think anybody ever gets sober without God using the Holy Spirit to convict them. Not only is this wrong, but there's a better way. And I don't know how that works. The economy of God is way above my pay grade, but they don't give credit to God. And I don't think if God doesn't intervene, double negative there, there's no way you'd change. People go, you know, I hit bottom because, you know, I did this. Well, why didn't you do that 5 years before, Mr. I'm in charge?
Yeah, good point.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people hit bottom when they die. We had Glenn Pickering on here, Dr. Glenn Pickering, one of our favorites on Real Recovery. He goes, you can change anytime you want to. And if you're out there struggling with drinking in and out, circling the drain of recovery like I did for 7 years, the reason you don't have is because you don't ask. It's in the book of James. Pray to God for the desire to quit. You need a heart change. You need to become a whole new creation. If any man be in Christ, he's a new creation. Because what you do is drink and party, okay? You're not going to stop that. That's your identity, your fun, your go-to. You need an outside agency, God, to change that.
Yeah. Boy, I got a street preacher tonight.
We're going to have an offering in a minute.
Well, you might notice I didn't bring my wallet.
You never do.
I never do.
Don't have a wallet.
Well, why would
you
I
told
ever
me
do that?
When I got a new one, which one to buy, which was really interesting.
I did buy you a wallet, I think.
Yeah, I still have it.
Yeah, as long as you keep the credit cards in it and always treat when we go out. That's my only request. All right, we have a good story tonight. Our guest, Honey, is going to be joining us and telling us her journey and her recovery through the power of the Holy Spirit. You are listening to Real Recovery. If this is the first time you have joined us, we're awfully glad you discovered our show, and we've got plenty at our website. You can go to myfaithradio.com. Check out the show page. It's called Real Recovery. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
All right, we are back. Real Recovery, Bill and George. So glad that you joined us. We're very much looking forward to hearing an incredible story tonight from our guest, Honey, who's here with us in studio. George, I know you've been anticipating this just like I have.
Always, Bill. Yeah. Never get tired of hearing God's story in people.
Absolutely. Honey, right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here.
Thank
with you
so
both.
Much. Well, now, George and I are always interested in finding out your humble beginnings, your childhood, and some of the ways in which you grew up and what family life was like. Did you go to church? What was that like?
Sure. So I'm an Eagan native. I born and raised in the same house my entire life.
Eagan is a suburb in Minnesota, just yes. for our listeners.
Twin City. Yeah, a smaller suburb of the Twin Cities.
All right.
And so I grew up going to church every Sunday. I was very active in my church. I was raised Catholic, baptized, got my first communion, confirmation, all those fun milestones in the faith walk. And, you know, school was great for me growing up. I had a lot of friends. I had a very well-rounded childhood. I had two parents who were just so supportive, loving, kind, and there for me, and three amazing brothers who were the same, you know, just always so supportive. So very well-rounded childhood. There were, you know, things such as bullying and stuff here and there, but that was never something that brought me to the wayside. I stayed on a path that I felt the Lord was always calling me to, and one of that was music. And I discovered my voice at a very young age. I was about 5 years old, and from there on out, I kind of just used my voice to express myself, never knowing that the voice He had given me was for something far bigger than just singing any old song. But through that, through music and through childhood friendships and sports and a loving family, I felt very well equipped to move on to my teenage and adult years, where I then went out to New York and pursued theater and such. So, but that was kind of how I grew up, very active in the community, very active in my church. I can remember as far back as going to Billy Graham events, you know, I think they had it at the Metrodome back
they did.
When I was
yeah.
Yes.
Michael Card.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
And seeing those worship sets in between his, you know, when he would speak, it just was so moving, and at such a young age, and I never quite knew what it was that was hitting. I mean, I knew the Lord was very present, but not to the extent I do now, obviously, as life is exposed so much of his truths to me, but yeah.
I love that. Mm. So did you sing in choirs in high school theater?
I did.
You did it all, didn't you?
Yeah. So I mean, I was in, to be honest, I grew up doing competitions, talent shows, contests. I was in regional theater. I did as many high school shows and middle school shows as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. And even through that, I met like just such a wide, diverse group of people, and was constantly, you know, going from group to group to group, kind of like just experiencing the fullness of what each of those people had to offer through those communities, you know. So that was really fulfilling. And I also felt like I had a purpose. I felt like I was set in the place I was supposed to be in with the people I was and in the role that I was playing, whether that was, you know, the lead in a show or a chorus member or the one taking third or first place, you know. So everything kind of served its purpose and fulfilled me as a child and a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
George, I can't anticipate at this point any downside coming our way.
No.
I can't. So far, I can't see anything that looks like,
you know,
downside.
Unless you wanted to make things a little better, or you got into a new crowd that you wanted to fit into.
Yeah, that's all a possibility, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you've had a wonderful high school experience. You've made good friends, and you had lots of opportunities to use your gift that God gave you, this voice of yours. And now you are thinking about how to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
Right? So what happened? Where'd you go?
So I ended up graduating and I went to NYU, New York University, the Tisch School of the Arts program. And I was in conservatory with 30 other students. And that was a 4-year intensive. I ended up graduating in 3 years. I stayed 2 summers to ride it out and graduate early so I could start pursuing the roles that I was just aching to play and be a part of. So I graduated from NYU. Again, friendships were kind of, I felt like I kind of went in and out of groups in certain ways, but with conservatory, you stick with those 30 people and they become like your family. And I developed really great friendships with those people. But through that, I felt like I started to lose a little bit of myself. I felt it was the beginning of my eating disorder, first off. I mean, I began to develop who I was based off of the community I was surrounded by and what I felt would get me, or what I was told would get me the most job, get me the most job opportunities. So with that, I felt like losing weight and changing my hair and changing how I looked would get me to the place that I needed for success. And I think through, especially through the beginning of that, I started to lose sight of who I was and who the Lord was calling me to be. And that persisted. That persisted for a long time. And I think that was the beginning of what addiction was for me, ultimately. So I finished school. I ended up touring. I did a bunch of shows regionally throughout the country. And throughout that process, my weight and the mental struggle of that was always in constant limbo.
Pretty good start here, Billy.
Yeah, it's a great start. And I got a lot of questions. I mean, the questions are brewing. Like, George, do you even know what conservatory means?
Not the place with the plants and stuff.
See, I was afraid you didn't know either. You know, when she talked about New York City.
You know what I think? I was thinking, okay, the shows, you're doing musicals and stuff. I would think, okay, you know, you come from Minnesota or any other state and you go out there and the competition, the talent's got to be a lot better than here. Is that fair?
Oh, by far. And I think that's why I started losing myself in it. I was like, how do I keep up? How do I keep up? And you know, auditions weren't, they were early in the morning and I was non-union. So I'd be waking up at like 4 a.m. so I could catch a subway to be in line by 5 so that I could wait until 8 o'clock when they opened the door. Wow. So, you know, so it was like a constant battle of like trying to feel like I needed to keep up with the world, but still battling this internal struggle of feeling like I wasn't good enough as I was and how I was wasn't serving its purpose. So then through that struggle of eating, I ended up moving out to Los Angeles. I ended up doing the things I wanted to do with theater, but I felt like I had had enough of trying to mold myself to something, and I wanted to be my own artist and have my own music. And during this time, I started a YouTube channel and was doing like covers of popular songs. And when I would do those covers, sometimes I would have gained a little weight or I would have lost a little weight, and it's just like the comments would be about weight, and it
not
was
music.
I mean, there were tons of comments about music,
nevertheless.
But the ones about the weight would stick with me because it felt like here I am not being enough and I'm giving like all that I can give, but it's just, I mean, if that's all they're focusing on, like, again, like, how can I appeal and appease and apply myself to this world, you know, because especially in entertainment, it's like you are selling yourself. And that was the idea that I wanted. I wanted to be a star. I wanted to be famous. I wanted a name. And I mean, throughout the story, you'll hear that's so much different now. But I ended up being like, you know, no, I'm done doing the theater thing. I want to go do music. I want to go write my own stuff. I had done major competitions with Ryan Seacrest and had done shows on MTV. And I felt like music was where my heart was calling me, and it always had. I just thought that theater would be a great outlet for me, and it would help me express myself more. But I was finding that music was really the thing that was pulling me closer. So I ended up moving to Los Angeles, and my time there was a lot different than any other of my life.
George, I have a question, and honey, maybe you can tell us what your eating addiction looked like.
Sure. Full transparency, bulimia, anorexia, laxative addiction.
Binging and purging kind of thing?
Yeah, and binging for sure. Like, yeah. It wasn't just always like deprivation. Like, there were times when I'd go into extreme swings of constant eating, you know, and I would gain a lot of weight and be extremely uncomfortable in gaining weight so fast too. So there were both. But the laxative addiction was actually what kind of broke that for me. My parents ended up seeing me in a show. I was in an off-Broadway show in New York, and my parents were coming to support me. And they were like, wow, obviously you're beautiful and we love you, but you do not look healthy. This doesn't look like you. And it was in the thick of all of that. I was suffering through the a laxative addiction, bulimia, and anorexia. And then when I ended up going to Los Angeles, then I ended up seeking help, and I saw a therapist about it. And, you know, it's something that you'll live with forever. Your brain, you try to rewire through the grace of God and release of shame and guilt. Like, you're able to develop new patterns and new routines in life, even if that means like your thought process. And I feel like my parents' support through that and therapy and obviously the love of God, which is, you know, number one, helped get me right back on track, you know, with how I needed to be with my health in eating, that is.
My experience, that's the toughest addiction to treat because you have to eat. So, like, I don't have to do cocaine 3 times a day. That would not be a good program, okay? And alcoholics, too. I think unless you're a priest, that might be very difficult, and I'm sure it is. But that's it. And you talked about something about the thoughts. My friend Denny always tells me, just because you think it doesn't mean you have to do it, George. And over the years, I've been able to break that pattern. Mm-hmm. And that is a process, but it's ongoing. And I think the gift, the thorn in your flesh, is you have to stay tight with Jesus, walking, you know, every day, all the time, or you mess up because it's bigger than you are.
It is. And it's just so easy. There's so many things always in the way that we could, that are fogging the way to the Lord. But when we push that aside and the way is cleared, like life is more clear. Life is more doable, you know?
All right, we're going to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery, and we're awfully glad you are. We're going to be back with our guest, Honey, who is here with us in studio in just a minute. Oh, that's A-okay.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to the show. So glad tonight to be talking to Honey. She's got quite a story. George, from what I can tell, the upbringing was she was thriving as a young person in a very supportive family. She had talent. She was able to express herself musically throughout all of high school. She had friends. She went to church. I'd say things are going pretty good. And then...
Yep.
Then you go into New York and you're starting to gravitate towards Los Angeles, and you're starting to realize that there's a lot of competition, and she felt like if she didn't fit the mold, there might be fewer opportunities. So she wanted to just dive into her music. So that's where we last left off, if you just joined us. So, honey, what happened from there? So now you're in L.A. Are you looking for community and friends?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm a very social person, and I think growing up in the entertainment industry, I feel like there was always that feeling of support, like you have a cast or you have, you know, the friends that you're in dance with or whatever you're studying, working on, you just build this community. So I, after finishing up the show that I was in New York, you know, after everything had happened with, you know, my parents and seeing how I was with my eating, I was really craving community. That had ended, and now I was like in the brink of an eating disorder while seeking therapy and going there. But I needed something different. I wanted to like live life. I was a good kid all my life growing up. I got straight A's. I excelled in what I set my mind and heart to. And I ended up just feeling like I needed to go have some fun. I didn't drink, you know, much during college. I wasn't like a drinker. I didn't go out and party, nothing like that. I was in bed early every night. I was doing what I needed to do. So by the time I got to LA, I felt like I was in a whole different mindset. I was like, I'm ready to go, you know? I'm ready to have friends. I'm ready to experience life. I'm ready to get out and perform and sing my music and make a name for myself. And in order to do that, I need to get out in the community. And
rub elbows, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Go to parties.
Oh, yeah.
Go to places where there's going to be networking.
Yeah.
And I bet that involved social adult beverages.
Oh, many of those.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Shocked, Bill. Totally shocked.
You're shocked. Over.
Yeah. Well, you got and you no like surprise. It, don't you? It's fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, it allowed me to numb and not feel like I had to be the good person that I had always been. I felt like I could throw the rule book out and I could be like, you know, well, I'm intoxicated, so there's an excuse for how I was last night, or you know, things would happen and I'd blame it on the alcohol. And it's like, you know, that started going like to an extreme. Like I'd find myself not just out on weekends anymore. I found myself, ending an 11-year relationship, that had ended, because my drinking got so bad. I ended up, waking up on the street, not knowing how I'd gotten there. I had fallen asleep in festivals on Hollywood Boulevard. I'd woken up in hospital rooms, you know, ripping IVs out of my body and realizing that I had been in detox, not even knowing how I'd gotten there. And I was scared of it all. Like, and I would run. Like, they used to call me, like, my friends or the group of people I was hanging out with used to call me the flight or fight girl. And it was either I was fighting or I was running, you know, and people never knew why I'd run. And I didn't always either, but apparently I always felt like I was in some sort of danger. And a lot of the time I was in danger. And, you know, the drinking had got me into some circumstances that just were absolutely unfortunate. But, you know, you learn through those and you grow and you try to do the best with life that you can. But ultimately, the drinking consistently got worse. And I started using other forms of drugs and finding myself just digging myself deeper and deeper into the grave and covering myself up, not wanting to see the light anymore and being like, this is the life I'm choosing now. And it was crazy to me because I went to church during all this. I went to church every Sunday still. And whether or not I was hungover or not from the night before, I still got myself up and went to church. And it was the one time that I felt like during worship that I could just be myself and not feel judged from anything that I had done the previous week. And Lord knows that I would get on my knees during those worship hours and just confess everything. I would just mentally and emotionally purge everything that I had done that week that I had felt so guilty and shameful of. And eventually there was just a part of me that was like, I can't be here anymore. I can't be in LA. I'm not in a relationship anymore. My faith is falling, and I'm falling short to my faith. And I couldn't see myself getting sober there, but I knew I had to. And I had friends that were sober there that were like, we're here for you. And even with that support, I knew I couldn't do it. So I ended up moving back to Minnesota then, back in 2019, about 3-4 months before COVID hit. And that was the greatest blessing I could have ever received, was moving back here to Minnesota, because everything changed. When I came back here, I went back to my roots. I went back to where God had formed me and where he grew me. And I mean, it wasn't an easy road coming back here either. And being here in the beginning, you know, I was still spiraling downward, still doing the same things I was doing out in LA. And but eventually that took a turn when, you know, I hit a few rock bottoms, not even just one. Sometimes it doesn't take one rock bottom. Sometimes it does. I know many people that hit their rock bottom and they, you know, if they said, okay, that's enough. You know, I've met many people who have said, I haven't even hit a rock bottom, but I figured it out before I hit the rock bottom, you know. But Minnesota regrounded me and helped me resurface from drowning.
What did you do to resurface from drowning?
Well, I remember one of the last times I drank, you know, I had put a date on my calendar and I had said, you know, July 5th, July 4th is the last day. It's America's day. I'm going to drink with the family up at the cabin and do what I'm going to do. And, but July 5th is my first day that I will not have a drink. And
that's patriotic, Bill. That's nice.
Yeah.
I'm like sticking it to the man. No, I'm just kidding. No more beer for me. But no, and that's the thing too. I don't judge any of it. You know, everybody's path is their own path. So, but for me, I gave myself a cutoff. I had gotten in a few, instance rough patches, you know, with the law. And, I had been arrested, and when I was arrested, I was put in solitary confinement, and that was in the first month of COVID. And I'm getting really honest here, but I was in solitary confinement, and I remember they had a window in that room, and I looked up through it, and I saw the sun after a night of not remembering much. And when I saw the sun, I saw the sun's face, you know, Jesus's Christ, Jesus's face. And I just broke down crying in that room. And I was like, why is this happening to me? Why am I going through this? Like, why can't I get better? I know that I'm in here and I know that you're in here with me. Like, why is the darkness covering us so much? Why can't I see you in here, you know? And I thought to myself, I know I'm going to go back to drinking because this is just unbearable living in this. But I don't know how to like even find a few days of relief, you know? And after that was the one that was like, okay, I gotta figure this out. So I went to my mom and I said, I need help. And she was like, let's go see someone to analyze like what kind of therapy and help and recovery process you're needing. Because we didn't know if I needed inpatient. We didn't know if outpatient would be doable because I had multiple jobs still. I was very functioning while still doing all of this. And we did. I saw someone and she submitted me into a recovery trauma-based center in Eagan. River Ridge was the name. And through that, I had built a community that I was hoping for. And there were a lot of like nights, you know, I was outpatient, and we had 3 to 4 hours, 3 hours or three nights a week. So we had Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. They didn't want us going out on Fridays drinking, but during COVID there was nothing open. So it's like the only thing that was open were alcohol stores. And it was so easy just to be like, I can literally see an alcohol store from my house. And it's so easy just to be able to walk across the street and do the transaction and have your way. But after that first day of not drinking on July 5th, which was really hard for me because I was driving back from the cabin, then I'm like, oh, I just like now I'm going to do all these, like, I don't want to do anything. I just want to drink. But I ended up being like, you know what? No, like you got laundry to do. Do your laundry. Nope, you got grocery shopping to do. Do your grocery shopping. So it's just like, it really was one action and one step at a time. And that was the same for the growing of my faith as well through it, you know, through community and through the exchanges of genuine smiles, not smiles that, you know, are put on or fake, but genuine smiles that are coming from a place deep within. You know, that's part of the building of the faith, that we get to smile again and start to feel what it's like to feel human and not numb because we don't feel we're enough or are worthy of something because of what we've done or what we've experienced. You know, recovery is for everyone. It's not just for alcoholics or narcotic users or, you know, overeaters, or undereaters or shopaholics or, you know, whatever your thing may be. It's for everyone because there's something that might be pulling us away from the Lord. And whatever it is that's pulling us away from the Lord is the thing that we need recovery from. Ultimately, we need to disassociate with that and just cling to Him. And through that process of clinging to Him, I've done so much with my life. It's been, it'll be 3 years, July 5th this year of 2023. And I never knew my life could be like this. I didn't know that, three months in, I started to feel like myself again. I started to have feelings and emotions and lots of them. And I was like, oh, like, how do I feel this without feeling like I'm going to be spiraling in some way? And, you know, the Bible has been my therapy, and music, worship music, whether it's me singing it or me listening to it and receiving it. Writing has been a huge thing. I've completely redirected who I am as an artist. I was, you know, always seeking stardom and fame, you know, back before I really knew what this walk was and what this journey was. And now discovering it, I'm like, oh man, this is all for you. This is not about like us at all. It's for the glory of you. Like us, we are for the glory of you. So every opportunity that we get to show you in our pursuit of life, like you are great. You are happy with that. And to please the Creator, I mean, what could be greater than that? And that's, you know, my life now, worship music. It's not, you know, the pop music or this or that. You know, my story now of music takes people through my recovery journey so that anybody else who's going through that and feeling the things they're feeling can sink into some of these songs and feel like, oh, that's what I feel too, you know? But now my faith journey is changing even more. And now I'm diving straight into worship and all music revolving around faith because I feel like truly the greatest way to experience this life and to live the life that you were put here to live is through giving it all up to Him and giving the glory to Him and giving Him all the credit. Because when we start to take that on, you know, ourselves fully, we lose sight of that humility. And once the ego grows, that's when, you know, where addiction starts to come in again. And when we can kill that ego and turn it up to Him, it's like we don't need to suffer anymore. He's already done the suffering for us.
Yeah. All right. Amazing story. We're going to get back and hear some more. You are listening to Real Recovery, George and Bill. Bill and George. I always have to make sure I have that in the right order. Don't take that personally, George.
And Rosie today.
Anyway, Rosie filling in for Junior, so
Junior
that's good.
Junior's gone, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where he... Where is Junior? Do we know?
All-Star Wrestling Contest or
No,
something?
I don't think so.
No, that was Alex.
That was Alex, yeah. All right, we'll take a break. Be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you are joining us tonight. If you missed any of it, I bet you're going to want to go and hear this story from the beginning. You can learn that at myfaithradio.com. That's the place to go. George, interesting way in which God orchestrates details in life.
Yeah, we talk a lot on this show that the greatest evangelical tool in this country, and we're being patriotic here with the July 5th dry date, is the Department of Corrections. Because when the door of the jail cell shuts on you, that's a moment of mental clarity, and you are beaten into a state of reasonableness. Mm-hmm. And good things happen sometimes.
Yeah. So you went through a treatment program. It was outpatient, and you got on the other side of it one day at a time. And through the strength of community and your time in God's word and prayer and worship, you have maintained sobriety for 3 years.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Are you still in that community? Do you have a recovery community that you
I do.
Participate in? Good.
I do. And my partner, actually, he and I met in recovery, and we both are on the worship team now, too. So I'm like, it's amazing where God takes you in all places in your life, you know? And especially, I mean, I had my church community while developing my recovery community. So they both went kind of hand in hand. It would be like, Monday nights would be for this, Tuesday nights would be for this. So I filled my weeks with things that not only I took pleasure in, but I felt like my purpose was being served in. So whether that was, you know, being with my girl group on Tuesday nights, hanging out, just having a good time and sharing my input on how my recovery is going and being an ear to those who are, you know, trying to express how theirs is going. You know, it's just about that community. I mean, what do they say? That the opposite of addiction is...
Connection.
That was what it was all about. I was just like, how can I pursue this beautiful web that the Lord is spinning for me with all these people? And where am I seeing him, and where am I feeling like he is calling me to be? And through that, through, you know, girl groups and my recovery community. We had Wednesday night gatherings that was co-ed. So I got to meet some of the men and got to experience like the women from the morning session. So it's like that grew even more. And church with my worship team. And I do Sunday church. We do Tuesday night care nights. We do Wednesday night youth. So now I'm dipping into like the younger generations, which I find is extremely humbling. Like, these kids are the future, and now I'm trying to like help guide them so that they're not going down a similar path that I faltered to, you know? And that's where it's been so far, and it's been nothing short of incredible, and the life that I'd always dreamed of living. And he's making even bigger plans. Like, he's taking me to Israel in October with a leadership group at my church, and I get to go on mission trips this summer, which I never would have thought I would have been able to go on. My job is giving me the time to do that. So it's like, look at all these doors that are opening.
Sounds more exciting than a part in an off-Broadway play.
Oh, far more. Yeah. Bigger role.
You know, that's very interesting, that saying that the opposite of addiction is connection. Most people, when they say that, not you, miss the point of that. The connection is with God, not other people. It's God and then other people. And we hear that a lot from secular people, that it's about other people. That's a part of it. But I really think you don't get sober without the general providence of God. Because why all of a sudden, when you go, hey, I love doing this, now I don't want to do it? That's a God thing, Bill, all the way. But if you are connected with God, you're going to want to be around other people. And what you've done is break patterns. You were living for yourself, which I'm really good at. And now you're spending a lot of time working with others, worshiping God, helping other people. Good for you.
Thank you. Well, and when I say other people, like, I see God in other people. Like, when someone genuinely is smiling, like, I see the works of God in that person. So I feel like through that connection, that's the connection that's already happening. And absolutely, I mean, it's always, we're working on this thing right now where it's in, up, or up, in, and out, you know, with the community. And it's always about up first, you know, to Him, and then going inward with yourself so that you can spread it out to the community. And I found a lot of comfort in that roadmap that's very clearly laid out for me.
Mm-hmm. George, we have about 4 minutes left. And is there any piece of Honey's story that you want to go back and analyze or ask questions about?
No, it was very interesting to see the progression, that we like this feeling, we seek this feeling out, we wind up having blackouts, and you'd think, boy, that would scare you. No, you just got to dial down a little harder, and that's not going to happen again. I can control this. But what's really interesting to me is setting a date and keeping it. Most of us made New Year's resolutions. Well, I'll quit January 1st. I've been around the recovery rooms for over 40 years. I know one person whose dry date is January 1st.
Really?
Okay? And really what that usually does is enable you to keep drinking. Well, I'm going to quit then. So it's okay for me to use now. Well, she didn't do that. And what's really interesting for me is that as bad as it got, she knew she had to do something different, and she did it. We're really good starters. We're not good finishers. And what you did is you completely changed. And now we say on this program, Honey, all the time, God doesn't save us from our sins without having a job for us to do. And that's the best part of recovery, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. It feels good to have a purpose. It feels good to serve Him, because I feel like, again, when you're serving God, you're not serving, like, you're not worrying about yourself, and it's the pressure's taken off. So then suddenly when the pressure's taken off, it's like, you're not having to rely on something else. And but he's a good God.
I see, Honey, as I listen to your story, that you were striving for success, and the success striving was taking you down a horribly dark road.
Yes.
And now you're living in a place where you're striving for significance for His glory and to share the love of Christ that you have. And I love the work you're doing with younger people, because they're all facing things like fitting in, being the prettiest and the thinnest and everything mm-hmm. else. So they're aware of what they see on social media as the pressure to look a certain way and act a certain way, and to have a strong voice like yours to come alongside them and love them where they're at is really important.
That's why you're here.
Well, thank you. I feel humbled to be able to share my story and how God has worked in my life so graciously. And for anyone out there listening that feels like they're hopeless, or that their future isn't, there's not a potential future for you, that's just not the truth. Just seek His face, seek His truth, seek His love, and trust me, it'll all start to fall into place.
All right, Honey, thank you so much for being on Real Recovery. Hey, I don't know if you've downloaded the Faith Radio app. Go to your app store and check it out. I have to say, it's a beautiful app. I've got mine on my iPhone, and when you download it, you just can't believe how pretty it is. And you open it up, and it's very easy to navigate your way through it, and you can listen to Faith Radio live, or you can just check out the podcast. It doesn't matter where you go, you can download if you've got that Faith Radio app. So give it a try. And if you don't like it, it's easy just to delete it off your phone, but I'm pretty sure you'll keep it. That's all the time we have, Georgia boy.
Thank you.
Another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Say goodnight.
Good night.
Good night. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.